Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Jacob Rudner. The draft is over. Whew! Let's do this another one. We got 360 some days before the next one.
Yeah.
But the draft is over. The futures game is over. And let's try not doing those at the same time again if we could, because I was torn between two amazing things and trying to keep track of both. Very hard. But more importantly, we are here to talk about the entirety of the draft now. Now we see the whole picture. Now it's not something where you're wondering whether what's going to happen, whether this was a money saver for someone later. Now the whole picture is there. And along those lines, Jacob, like, you were really, like, I was kind of bouncing back and forth. You were nailed in, locked in on the draft today. What stood out to you, like, initially about day two?
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak generally because I think that we're going to go through some of the teams in a bit here. Mm-hmm. One of the things that stood out to me today was that there was definitely an influence on the draft from the college market, from the NIL space. I think that we saw some selections that were made and some that were not made that, here's actually, I will call up Uncle Ted. Shout out Uncle Ted. We'll call up your comment here. Colin Ritchie not being drafted. Yeah, that was definitely a surprise. But I do wonder, and it's still fresh, so we'll see what happens. But I do wonder if that is college NIL induced. And I think there were a lot of cases today of guys who went way later in the draft who probably had a pretty good chance to be selected inside the top 10 rounds. I'm talking about guys like Ethan Sutton, the South Florida right-hander who's committed to South Carolina. That strikes me as a transfer-induced late selection. I think Colin Ritchie is somebody who will be very interesting to follow over the next couple of weeks and what exactly Oklahoma State's plans are for him. I think that Connor Schouse, another South Carolina commit, very late draft pick, I believe in the 19th or the 20th round, that was a guy who I think was probably a candidate to go much sooner than he did. So I think my day two general theme takeaway as the college writer, I'm a little bit biased, but for me, it's that I think we saw college baseball win today at a pretty good rate. And we saw it influence the board and where some of those guys went.
I'll even go, like, kind of following up on yours, like Gavin Gallagher did not get picked. Okay, we know there's no scenario in which Gavin Gallagher is not a draftable player. But I would imagine that what that tells me is that the teams were not able to meet the desired level. Eric Paulson, another North Carolina, you know, guy, first baseman. I've heard, again, we wrote about it. We wrote about that there are players who are more valuable to their college teams than their perception as far as what their draft value is for teams. That we saw that, I think, happen in multiple examples today. We've seen that for years with high school players where you say, well, why did this high school player not get picked? And the answer is because no one wanted to pay as much as that player wanted to be bought out of college. Now we're seeing that there are college players who no one is willing to pay what it takes to buy them out of continuing in college. That's something that's a little bit different. But we do see some questions coming in. Please send in your questions. That's what we're going to spend a lot of the day doing. But I see, like, anonymous account says other unsigned names like Jake McCoy, Carson Bailey. You said on a podcast last week, if I remember correctly, you're like, guys like Jake McCoy are perfect examples of players who you're not just going to say, oh, this is a buy low candidate. Now you're going to say you're going to pay if you want to buy him out of school. These, we saw that over and over, I feel like, in this. And to me, that's kind of one of the things where, hey, this is players having options. So, you know, okay, I'm going to call up the next one too. Thoughts on the Willits picks in round five. I have a good answer on that, which is Eli Willits, who I talked to today after the game, very excited for his brother, Jackson Willits. I actually didn't know at that time. I was trying to bounce back and forth, but I was really focused on the futures game. And I'm like, so, you know, and he's like, oh, got picked the fifth round. So Jackson got picked while Eli was playing. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
but I mean, again, I think that in the fifth round, that's a good pick from the standpoint of we very much know what Jackson is. You know, I would say that there are in pro ball, he'll probably be in a little bit more limited role than the most outstanding player of the College World Series role he was in Omaha. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, he's going to have a role in pro ball.
Yeah. And I'll go back to a comment that we were looking at earlier, which is this one right here. Jake McCoy was selected in the 18th round by the Blue Jays. But that is, to your point, what we were talking about last week on our pre-draft show. he was a great example of somebody whose NIL influence was playing a really big role. And I think that there's more to it than just NIL. I want to be clear that I think that there is, you know, this is a multi-layered conversation. I don't think it's as simple as X college is going to pay X player a certain amount, and that's why he's not going to turn pro. But I do think that it's a part of it. The other thing is, I think that there are guys like Jake McCoy who are well positioned to potentially go back to school, prove that they can do it, because the reality is he has not yet performed as a college player. He was very good on the Cape Cod League, but he did not do it at the Division I level. He's yet to really perform there. You go to Tennessee and you prove that you can be an effective starter in the SEC over the course of a season once you get healthy. That could be a boon to your draft stock, especially if guys are going to get 5 years of eligibility. So I think that there's a level of safety for a college player in going back to school right now. I think that there's a level of payday that exists for some of these guys that doesn't hurt you when it comes to having those kinds of conversations. And the result is the Jake McCoys of the world have a ton of leverage and he will go back to school.
And I will say with this, also, when we talk about it, it's not just a purely financial $1 for $1 thing, because you also have players who you're going to have to pay them more to get them out of college because they really enjoy where they are. They like the environment. They like their teammates. And on top of that, in some cases, they're going to be much closer or they're going to finish their degrees, which there's a value to that. So it's sometimes it's not that, okay, well, I'm getting paid X, so if you'll pay me X, I'll leave.
Right.
Sometimes it's like, you're going to have to pay me more than that because I am in a good situation right now. You're going to have to buy me out of a good situation, not something where, oh, I'm, you know, looking for the exits and just trying to find a way out of here. Chris, on the Wheels of Steel, if you could, you could serve up some of the team questions, thoughts. We'll kind of go through some of the teams. So, okay, I'm going to hand this one over. Sean Dunlap, I know, and then, you know, but he was focusing on Tennessee. Again, high school players, if you don't, in this world right now, I think we had Dunlap. Where do we have Dunlap on here? I know he was recently high. Dunlap 153 on the BA 500. That's kind of that range where you're kind of in a tricky spot, right? Which is you are a very good prospect, but you're not in that first tier of high school players who's going to come off the board. And when you're not, then it becomes a tricky, kind of a tricky decision. And often a lot of those guys do end up getting to school. So that's a good one. Thoughts on the A's draft? I am going to call up the Athletics draft right here. Okay, so we got obviously at the top, we got Drew Burris, Mason Edwards, Gabe Gackle, Jacob Duden. We talked about some of those, Roman Martin yesterday. I would say that they, if you look at going beyond that, Evan Blanco in the 13th jumps out to me, Javar Williams in the 11th out of Wake Forest. But who jumps out to you?
Yeah, so some of the middle round picks, some of the earlier guys that they took in the single digit rounds as well. David Rosso was a senior out of Campbell, who I thought was a really interesting guy. He was very highly ranked on our senior sign list. Their draftee in the round after that, in the 8th round, Aiden Weaver was somebody who was a standout to us. Tanner Marsh is a very athletic middle infielder from Liberty with some tools. It's a little bit raw, but he's, you know, got potential. Javar Williams, who they took in the 11th round, is a 70 or 80 run, no doubt center fielder from Wake Forest, who I saw in person earlier this year and I thought was interesting. Nathan Aceves, who they took in the 12th round out of UC Santa Barbara. Lack of feel for spin there, but a pretty good fastball, good angles, good mover. The UC Santa Barbara was high on him, and maybe they thought maybe there was a chance that he would get back to campus. I think that's probably pretty unlikely at this point. I think it's a good draft overall. Like, you look up and down the board, I think that the money saver types who they picked, some of the senior types, were the right guys. They were guys that we liked a lot at Baseball America. That doesn't make them the right guy.
But I'll say that, trust me, I've written up some seniors already today, and I'm like, these are not as good as the seniors as some of the other ones we had.
Right. And I think the ones that the A's took are like really solid seniors. Rosso, I'll go back to him. Like, that's a guy who has a no doubt plus pitch, a great changeup. He's up to 99 miles per hour. It's power arsenal. And then I think the earlier round picks that we talked about.
I wanted to bring up Alex Sosa because I wrote him up for the, and like when I wrote him up, I updated him. I think we moved him up in our final, because he really did. He really performed. You're talking about a catcher who cut, you know, Miami's catcher this year. Really had a good year offensively. I don't think, you know, again, you're getting him in the 6th round. You're not saying he's a surefire bet. But at the same time, there are definitely some skills there that give him a chance to be a big leaguer down the road.
Yeah, agreed. And again, like some of the earlier picks that they made that we talked about yesterday, which I would encourage you, if you didn't watch our show, it was JJ and I and Carlos Collazo in a less comfortable setup than we're in right now. But nonetheless, it was a good show. We did talk about the A's then, and we were impressed with their draft.
Okay, next question. Cubs took a ton of pitchers besides Townsend. besides Townsend, who intrigues you? Which they also didn't take Miles Bailey, big power out of FSU, you know, some swing and miss questions. But I would say that you've got Carson Jossa here from Nebraska, the right-hander who really took a giant step forward, I would say, this year as far as control and success. It's always had stuff, but the control really kind of took a step forward. I'm going to kind of tee you up here because I see, like, names on here, like Cole Triba and others.
Earlier than that, actually, would be the first name that I single out. That's Isaac Morton, their sixth-round pick, right-hander out of Minnesota. Had Tommy John. He got hurt towards the end of the year. This year, it was a full season's workload, so you actually do have, if you're interested in going and watching some of these guys, there is plenty of film of Isaac Morton from this year. He was a Brewers draft pick out of high school in 2023. Really impressive feel for spin. That's kind of the name of the game for him. It's a plus slider, really a sweeper that he has, you know, pretty decent control over. It's a chase pitch for him. He is able to throw it for strikes. The fastball's in the mid-90s. It's a little bit mechanically funky, like somebody who probably profiles as more of a reliever just because of the way he does it and how much effort he needs to get to the mid-90s. But I do think that that was the kind of pick who has a chance to blossom significantly in pro ball. And I can tell you that there were a number of teams heading into the draft that viewed Morton as a priority target as a Tommy John guy in the middle rounds, so they had the money to be able to do it. And the Cubs did. I'll give you a really deep pull from their draft, and that's 11th round pick Ariston Vizi. I'm probably butchering that name, so you'll have to look it up. Out of Clemson, was a full-on reliever, does not have any starting experience, limited workload in 2026, but it is a great fastball. He is very mechanically raw, but it's mid to high 90s, cut ride shape, very low vertical approach angle, so it makes it, best way to explain that is what? Carry at the top of the zone. Mm-hmm. It's going to play well at the top of the zone. And so I do think that they did a really good job. I could go through this list and find a number of other names that were really good, but those two in particular.
The one I will call out, which is not a basically, but I'm just interested to note that Brennan Hudson, their 20th rounder, who's a senior sign guy. So, I mean, again, not a senior sign really, the 20th, but a guy would sign for, but listed as a catcher. Did not expect to see that part of it.
We'll see if that holds. Brennan Hudson was a full-time first baseman for Georgia this year. If anything, he's more of a designated hitter than a first baseman. But listen, in the 20th round as a senior sign, you're looking to create some value. Why not give it a shot if he's willing to go back there and learn how to catch? Because as we know, one of the greatest areas for development when it goes from amateur to pro baseball is behind the plate. These teams do have the ability to kind of build catchers from scratch. And if they think that he can hit, which we know he can, that's an interesting pick.
This one's teed up for Jacob. So I'm going to talk first. We said thoughts on Giants day two haul. Luke Dixon, their fifth round pick, son of Trot Nixon, was a very productive performer at NC State. But now I'm just clearing out and getting out of the way. I'm handing the ball over because the sixth rounder is one of Jacob's. Really, he's a Rudd Bud. He's not a Rudd Bud, but he's a Rudd Bud.
This is actually a sixth and seventh round Rudd Bud situation. Yes. Sixth round, Eric Nachtsheim out of McNeese State, right-handed pitcher, 6'4". For you football fans, he is built like a linebacker at 6'4", 225 pounds, big, strong frame. And for him, the calling card is that fastball. It's a mid to high 90s fastball, cut ride shape. He's a great mover on the mound. A little bit of work to do in the secondary department and some work to do in the control department. But by all means, I think that this is a pick with relief pitching in mind in his future. You probably give it a chance to start as a sixth-round pick, at least out the gate. But I think long-term, you're probably looking at a reliever and a pretty good one at that, considering the quality of the fastball. And then a round later, they went right back to the top of our senior sign list. And that was for Bo Bryans, the left-hander out of Jacksonville State. I personally think that he is the second best senior in this entire class, second only to Ruger Riojas. Bo Bryans, though, is electric. It's mid-90s fastball, heavy sink and run. He is up to 99 from a low sidearm slot. There is a sweeper and a changeup in there, and there are a number of scouts that believe that the sweeper and changeup have a chance to get to plus. So an advanced player, a former two-sport athlete, so this is somebody who moves really well on the mound. I think that there are some questions about control, probably some questions about whether or not somebody of his stature and arm slot is really built for a rotation. But as you and I talked about a couple of days ago, it might not even matter. That's a really good bet to provide you some org value and get to the major leagues, at least as a reliever with power stuff.
I want to also highlight Cody Brash, the eighth rounder. I think I wrote him up. I think it was me who wrote him up. But up to 99, fastball-slider combo. Again, a guy who has some work to do, but at the same time, has the pieces that you want to see for a, you know, for basically like an eighth round pick. I'd also kind of highlight Dalton Wentz, their 16th rounder, was a draft eligible sophomore. We don't know, obviously. We don't have any insight whether he's going to sign. Draft eligible sophomores often are a little bit tougher to sign. He's a 16th round pick. You draft a guy like that in the 16th round because if you don't sign him, there's no penalty to it. You don't lose any bonus pool. But he was kind of an interesting guy. I think that, again, as a 16th round pick, if he does sign, is kind of useful. Okay, thoughts on the Yankees draft. We're going to go to the Yankees. And obviously, we talked about the Dietz, Duncan, Brock combo yesterday.
But Contreras.
Contreras. Looking at today, I know we also had a question there asking about Luke Pettit, who is going to be notable partly because he is the son of Andy Pettit, you know, your former Yankee great. But I'll kick that one to you first. You know, the Dallas Baptist, I would say where he was picked, you know, he's got a shot.
Yeah, he has a shot. They drafted him as a two-way player. It's kind of a mixed bag if you get some scouting. When we got scouting feedback throughout the year this year on what exactly teams think that he's going to end up being, whether that's a pitcher or a hitter. He did have a really good year as a bat, and there is some strike-throwing quality there. We'll see what happens with that. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that they drafted him as a two-way player. That's kind of the standard practice for a player who has the ability that he has. Generally speaking, though, on the Yankees draft, I think it was good. There were a couple picks that stood out to me as maybe being a little bit of an overdraft type. Bear Harrison in the fifth round in particular, I thought was a little bit of a reach. We thought he was outside of the top 300, meaning outside of the top 10 rounds type of a prospect. But I also think that they made up for it in a number of areas. I'll give you my favorite example of that. That's Michael Harpster, their seventh round selection out of East Tennessee State. Great athlete. If you go over to baseballamerica.com, I wrote up a sleepers for day two story. He's in there. He's somebody who I've liked for quite some time. It's a mid-90s fastball, really good feel to spin. There's a cutter. There's a sweeper. There's kind of a cut slider hybrid type pitch. That's not really a traditional slider or cutter. It's kind of unique to just him. And then the mechanics are fun too. Another one of these like smaller but great mover types who are going to be fluid and are coachable. And I think those are the guys that are really good, like moldable balls of clay that you can kind of go in and really feel good about getting into the lab and doing some pitch development with. And he's a great candidate for that too. Some control issues, but the Yankees, I think, are a great organization for somebody who has his general athletic ability and pitch quality.
Moving on, we've got a question, which is thoughts on the Cardinals draft. Okay. So again, we're talking bigger picture here, yeah. But we talked about they had a bazillion picks yesterday, seven picks in the, but we're going to start with their fifth round pick.
My guy.
I mean, I love him too, but Cal Randall in the fifth round, it's a fastball. I mean, it's a pure reliever play. It is, but it's an 80 fastball. It is a top of the scale fastball that just because of its velocity plus movement characteristics is really hard to hit. That's, you know, basically, I'll tee you up though, because you know Cal Randall better than I do.
Yeah, I saw him a number of times in person this year. As JJ said, nothing really to add there. It is the best you can get when it comes to fastballs. It is an 80 on the scale. He is over 100 miles per hour with the pitch. I also think that there are some people who will look at like his baseball reference page and you're going to see the statistics and you're going to go, man, that guy walks a lot of batters. He's got to have terrible control and it's got to be a lot of balls mixed in. It's true to a degree. I mean, it is definitely a little bit of a spray gun, but you and I dug into this a couple weeks ago. The command is actually not as bad as the walk totals might indicate. I do think that there's kind of a foundation there for some command. And now the question is just whether or not the Cardinals are able to install for him some sort of secondary pitch, something that's going to allow him to not offer a fastball 90% of the time, because I don't think that will fly in pro ball.
I'll say with that though, that is something where teams are, to be honest, they're pretty comfortable. You could almost say arrogant about that. Hey, they have a buffet of pitches now, and they, whether you're a supernator, whether you're a pronator, whatever your movement characteristics are, they feel like that they can get you generally to some kind of breaking ball. Sometimes it's going to be, if you can't really spin it, it may be like a gyro slider, it may be a cutter, something where you're really just working on grip and, you know, more than you are really snapping it off.
Right.
But they feel like that they're going to give you some kind of wrinkle. So if hitters are hitting, you know, sitting fastball, you'll have something else. Generally, also, if your fastball is a lot of move, but something that often is more of a strike pitch to just keep people off of the fastball. But I also want to ask, because Owen Henney, the Seton Hill shortstop, is someone else I know that you're a fan of.
Yeah, definitely a fan. Starting kind of with the body, I think that sometimes some of these more obscured picks, and this is a Division II shortstop, you're looking for projectability, guys that you can mold into a different sort of player. And he really is that 6'3", 180-190-ish pound shortstop. He does have a chance to stick at the position. There's good arm strength. He's a good athlete. He moves well. But offensively speaking, there's a great foundation of contact. Bat-to-ball skills are at least plus. It was a 97% in-zone contact rate this season, which basically means when they challenged this kid in the zone, it was very difficult to get things past him. When he's swinging, he's mostly making contact. Now, granted, I think it's important to mention that is against Division II competition, so he was not as exposed to velocity and some of the breaking balls that some of the pitchers or hitters, excuse me, that were taken in that range are exposed to. But he has performed in the MLB Draft League over the summer. And again, I do think that this is somebody that has a lot of projection left, and the athleticism lends itself to a lot of growth.
Next question. Thoughts on the Rays draft, especially the sheer amount of prep pitching? I'll take a lot of this one. Yep, the only position player that the Rays drafted today was Ty Jones in the ninth. High school outfielder. But other than that, all pitchers today. Teams don't, especially we get today too, teams do in some sense draft for need, right? You have to fill rosters. And one thing I'll say about the Rays right now, the Rays have a very deep and loaded farm system. It is much more loaded in position players right now than it is pitchers. Doesn't mean they don't have pitchers. It, you know, obviously there's Brody Hopkins, I should say. Obviously, there's guys like Santiago Suarez, Gary Gilhill, Trevor Harrison. We could go down a list of guys. However, if you said what the depth of the system is and what the really like the log jams of the system is, they've got catchers, they've got shortstops, they've got outfielders. They have a lot of guys, especially A-ball, you know, and to some extent, double-A, not as much triple-A. They need pitching. And especially... You are also, I would say, the other thing I would say about that is that pitchers taken on day two have a higher likelihood of turning into more than you expect, I would say, than hitters. There's a reason we're seeing more and more hitters go first round. There is a logic, there is a thought, I would say, in the industry that your elite hitters are your elite hitters, especially ones who have athleticism and all as well. They just go off the board. Pitchers, we see every year, there's the pitcher who, oh, he had a 6 ERA in college, or he sat at 90-91, but then they added 5 miles an hour, and boom, there we go.
I mean, I'll just, to that point, the Rays in particular, I think, are an organization that can take a guy and really turn him into something scary. On the mound, Nate Smithberg was their 18th round selection this year. That was a guy who was pitching on the Cape last week, this week, actually, it's still Sunday. He was pitching on the Cape this week. We were there to watch him. You and I were there to watch him. And that was a really impressive arm. I mean, we're talking about low to mid-90s with a sweeper and a changeup from a submarine, you know, four-foot, sub-4-foot release height. That's a good arm. And that's somebody who is going to have a chance to make it in pro ball. He's an 18th-round selection. I would say that that's a great pick for that range, and it's certainly somebody who has the ingredients, and it's a long road to be able to get there, but certainly has the ingredients to figure it out and be successful in pro ball. So to your point, you can look through some of these draft lists and get really late into the game and find arms that I think are really high quality, whereas with the bats, it is pretty limited, on the college side especially, to the top couple of rounds if you're going to feel comfortable.
Next question. Seattle sixth-round pick Henry Ford's profile kind of resembles that of their first-rounder Ace Reed. Seems like a good get at 191. I would agree with that, yeah. Like at 191. It is a similar profile. I would say that the difference being that Reese has done much more. Ford, I would say, again, trying to be just honest about it, but not, you know, unreasonable, has not reached the level of production that was expected of him kind of coming into his college career. Is that fair?
I would say that that's fair, and I'm going to give you a couple other big differences here. One of them is left-handed, Ace Reese. One of them is not, Henry Ford, as a hitter. I think that matters a lot. Henry Ford has had some swing and miss problems. If he ends up being a platoon bat in pro ball, it is weak side platoon, meaning that he would play against left-handed pitching, which is not terribly desirable. It's not like he's going to go and be a weak side platoon guy who sticks at third base. There is a lot of concern about whether or not he's going to be able to stay at the position. The footwork is poor. The throws are generally okay, ranging down to inaccurate. He does have a strong arm, which is why there's been some experimentation throughout his college career playing in the outfield. I think that there are a number of people who believe that that's kind of the path forward for him in pro ball. A semi-athletic, not such a graceful mover, but a powerful, strong-throwing right fielder type is probably the path that he heads down. He was drafted as a third baseman, though, so we will see. But to go back to the exact question, I think at 191 in the sixth round, that's a pretty fair value for a guy like Henry Ford.
Next up, okay, we're going to go to the Rockies draft. Opinions on the two high school arms that the Rockies picked. Okay, so we're going down to Tyler Putnam, Missouri High, Battle High, and then other high school arm that they picked. Are we having to scroll down further? Gavin Schwartz, their 11th rounder, an Indiana commit who, I mean, touching mid-90s right now, basically with room to develop. I would say, I think those are the two you are asking me about.
Yeah.
Okay, Putnam basically is, I would say, an even better version of that. You are talking about a potentially really good fastball. You're talking about the makings of a slider as well. You are talking about a, you know, he's a Tennessee commit. You know, this is a good get. This is the range where you, if you take him in the fifth round, you feel pretty comfortable you're getting him.
And that, you just kind of took the words out of my mouth. I think that anytime you're taking a guy in that range, it's because you are very eager to add him to your organization. And it's basically a lock that he is going to be a professional baseball player this summer. Tennessee commit. I know, just having talked to a number of people, that Tennessee really wanted him to get to campus. That was one of the guys that they had circled as their priorities. And so anytime that you steal somebody from a high-level program like that, they wanted to see is a win. And I think that later in the draft, Schwartz, that's a good pick too. JJ, you kind of touched on it, but the velocity there, there are some breaking ball shapes, kind of the forming of breaking ball shapes. But I think that the name of the game with high school pitching, especially when you get it later, is just that it's kind of a blank page. Like you can do a lot developmentally as these guys get older and bigger and stronger. And kind of learn who they are as pitchers.
One of the Rockies pick, because we'll just talk about theirs, Lorenzo Carrier, their 14th round pick.
Pick they made.
Yeah. In the 14th round, like, yeah. Carrier was one of the best hitters in the ACC this year, and he's a Rocky now. I like that because it's really like there's power there and all.
Yeah.
I like that combo.
There is tons of power there, and I think that one of the things that we learned about Lorenzo Carrier this year is that he kind of learned how to hit a little bit too, which was the major concern for him throughout a very long college career, which has now culminated in pretty good value for a guy like that. 23 or maybe even 24 years old at this point, a corner outfielder.
Move him quick.
Yeah, move him quick. But the reality is, you know, for the Colorado Rockies to even have a chance of getting a guy like that into that environment offensively with his power is pretty exciting. And at the 14th round, there's virtually no risk to the organization at all. So that's kind of a win-only type pick. And I think it was a really smart one.
Next question. Thoughts on the Red Sox draft? Okay, so I will say that we ended up waiting a little longer than we thought we were. We kept going, okay, there's going to be at some point the big bonus prep is going to drop here, right? And we got through the fifth and the sixth and the seventh and the eighth, but then it happened.
Yeah, it did happen. And with a really good player too, one who I like, Martin Shalar. Is their big high school guy, Mississippi State commit. You imagine that they make that pick in that range because they are supremely confident, if it's not already a lock, that he is going to sign. To your point, though, I do think that it happened a little late. I think that the result of this class may be solid. The process was a little weird. I was surprised to see them go 8 college guys and at that, or 9 college guys, who were okay. Some guys who we felt like were major reaches down the board, from first rounder Jake Schaffner to, you know, that, let's see, you go down there. Brett Landman was a little bit of a reach. Kaide Iditarod in the 7th round, a left-hander out of Florida Atlantic. Good player. Like, I'd be the first to tell you, I'm a Kaide Iditarod fan, and I have been for some time. There are Slack messages to prove it. However, 7th round pick is a little hot. So I think that there were a number of examples where things were puzzling, But I do think that the high schoolers who they linked up with are potentially really good players. Shalar, and then my favorite is Jace Matuszynski, who they took in the third round. An extremely raw, but extremely gifted athlete. Two-sport kid again. Shortstop. We've seen him look really good in the field. It's a good arm. It's very bouncy, quick, twitchy actions. He's a plus runner. The question is just whether or not they can get the swing into a good spot. It's a little bit of a rough swing. He is reasonably new to baseball, but if they could do it, they've really got a good player there too.
Next question. Did the White Sox get too enamored with the story with Tomei versus what else they could have gotten at 34? No. I would say no. Landon Tomei, I would have been not shocked at all to hear another team take him. Excuse me. Take him in that range. That was not an inappropriate range for Landon Tomei. This is not something where it's like, oh, he's a legacy pick where it's going to take him.
No. I think that this was the range Landon Tomei was going to go in. It was not a surprise to see him go there. I don't think it's a reach. At that point, maybe was there a motivation to make it happen as kind of the cherry on top, the final seal of approval? Was that connection? Sure. It wouldn't surprise me. But is that the motivation to shoot some guy up the board who didn't belong there? Absolutely not. He was in that range to begin with. Our expectation was that he would go there, if not even earlier, if somebody got really excited. So it was a good pick.
I will also, because I know we had a question earlier that we only need to post it, but Cameron Johnson, 15th round, obviously a very up and down season,
career
really. However, if you get him signed in the 15th round, one thing that you will see him pro ball that you really can't do in college baseball. It's just hand him the ball and say, if you don't make it out of the first, you're going to get the ball next week. If you dominate, you're going to get the ball next week. And we're just going to keep doing this. And to see if you can basically, kind of slowly get to that point of throwing strikes more consistently.
Yeah, and I think that with Cam Johnson specifically, we're talking about somebody that does have traits. Like, this is not somebody who is, devoid of talent. This is somebody who does have fastball quality. It's a power sinker. The changeup has flashed plus at times. There is a slider that needs some work, but it exists. This strikes me as somebody who could actually be a reasonably quick mover if you can make the necessary corrections mechanically, things that are going to help him repeat a little more. It wouldn't surprise me to see them simplify things in the way that he does it on the mound. And if that clicks, I could see him moving very quickly as a left-handed reliever.
The way I would say is, if it clicks, this is a guy who has way more talent than the guys that picked around.
Agreed, by a significant margin, yeah.
Okay, thoughts on the Guardians draft. We are going to go there. Cleveland Guardians. Okay, so we talked, obviously, a little bit yesterday about Peterson and Schmidt at the top, the pitcher-heavy. Okay, but today we saw guys like Dayton LaChance, Savion Sims, which Ben Badler fave going in the seventh round.
Great pick.
And then going on a little further down, who jumps out to you?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, let me just give my general thoughts. Mm-hmm. Good draft. I think that they had a number of really eye-popping picks. Savion Sims is the headliner. But beyond that, just a lot of value is what I see. I don't know that there's anybody that bounces off the page as being outstanding in this draft. I think that Lucas Moore, if you can get him to a point where he's going to make enough contact, the power is extremely light. I mean, we're talking 20 power here. But if he can hit, this is a game-changing speed type guy. It's an 80 runner. He is a plus, if not double plus, defender in center field. So that, to me, is a value play. Is he a superstar? No. Dayton LaChance, is it? I mean, I love Dayton LaChance. I think that he's a good hitter with really good power. I think the arm is above average to plus, probably closer to above average. The questions for me will be whether or not they can get him to a point where the receiving and blocking are on par with the arm. Because, listen, at that position, if you can be a solid receiver with an above average to plus arm, you're a big leaguer. You don't have to hit a whole bunch.
I'll also point out, Guardians will not have any need to rush him because they have
their options.
They have four catchers on their big league roster. Then they have two more guys at AAA who are legitimate big league options. Then they have another guy at AA who's a legitimate big league option. Then they have kind of a sleeper pick who's rising up, who's in high A. They're full of catchers, so they can take your time.
Right, and I think that just to go back to something that we said earlier in the show for anybody that's just joining us, one of the areas that pro baseball has proven to be very successful developmentally is on catching defense. They really do take guys who you'll watch in amateur baseball and you'll think, I mean, there's no way that this guy is going to be a professional catcher. And then they end up being very good professional catchers. You can even go as far as to say guys like Cal Raleigh, who was just okay, if not worse than that, at Florida State when he was catching, is the best defensive catcher in baseball right now, or one of the best defensive catchers in baseball right now. That is a byproduct of professional development. So I do think that Dayton LeChance, just with the offensive skill set that's there, has a chance to really blossom as a professional catcher.
Okay, thoughts on D-backs draft. I don't think we really talked about them yesterday, so we can talk about, like, at the top, we had, like, Ryder Helfrich and then Blake Bryant. I think you were a fan of 15 for Helfrich. To me, it seems like a very
good
appropriate
range
to get him.
Yeah.
But what jumps out to you?
You know, I think any earlier than that for Helfrich would have been maybe pushing it. I know just in some of the conversations that I've had that there was kind of a mixed camp at the end of the class, at the end of the cycle, on where exactly Ryder Helfrich belonged in the first round. Smack dab in the middle seems very appropriate to me. I'll go down to their fourth round pick, Josh McDevitt out of Missouri. I think that is an A-plus pick. I think McDevitt maybe didn't get the necessary flowers just because of where he was playing, and that happens. You know, Missouri did not have the greatest season, and when you're pitching as the Friday night guy for a team that isn't doing a whole lot of winning, you can be easy to overlook. But this is somebody who's come a really long way over the course of the last couple of years, especially with his fastball. That fastball has turned into a fringe-plus pitch, both velocity-wise, in shape. He's a good mover. There are secondaries that exist right now, and plus I do think that there is kind of room to be able to build out the arsenal a little bit further just with his ability to manipulate the baseball and what he's currently able to do. So I love that pick. Going down the board, I think that there were a number of seniors that they took who were impressive. Michael Worley was ranked really well for us, up to 98, good feel for spin, out of Stony Brook. Chris Katz out of Mercer was the SoCon Player of the Year. Home run power, the data on him is outstanding. Some of those guys are a little bit tricky just because he did not have success at a number of higher major stops.
And they're seen, I mean, they're, again,
it's a senior sign.
It's a balance, right? You're taking, when you get a senior sign who, and you're trying to save money for other picks, you know that you're taking on often some hickeys.
Precisely. And you go look down at like the 11th round. That's kind of the range where things can get a little bit hairy when it comes to signing high schoolers, but they've got Cody Bachel.
Every single 11th rounder signed last year.
There you go. So that to me, when you take guys like Worley and Chris Katz in the top 10 rounds, inside the top 10 rounds, you get to the 11th and you draft a guy like Cody Bachel, who's a left-handed hitting first baseman, corner outfield type. He's got real power, good swing decisions overall. That guy becomes a lot more signable once you make some of the picks that are a little bit riskier. But granted, I think that the risky picks that they made were good.
Do the Royals. So we talked a little bit about Zion Rose, obviously Taylor Rabe at the top, but to go into today's picks as well, I'm going to highlight one that, again, they announced Camden Johnson, their ninth round pick from Oklahoma, as a shortstop.
No surprise.
That, you know, if you watched, you were in Omaha. But if you watched the College World Series, that's one of the lesser surprising, oh, we're moving a guy up the defensive spectrum announcements. That's one that kind of stood out to me.
Hunter Posehl in the eighth round, I thought was a really good pick. We had tabbed him as a sleeper as far back as I think early April, if not March. He is a really intriguing 6'8" left-hander with fastball quality, a little bit light on the velo side, but again, the shape and just the raw foundation there I think is good. And then the ability to manipulate the baseball on the off-speed side is very strong with him. So I loved that pick for them. Let's see what else I thought was interesting with the Royals.
I'm going to bring up 19th round. I would say you're unlikely to sign him, but Hudson Devon is a very interesting name.
Big fan.
That generally 19th rounders are the break glass in case of emergency. Something goes weird in the first 10 rounds, then you may, but that guy's probably getting to school. But that's a guy who when you see that, it's like, okay, if they somehow did manage to sign him, that would be an incredible gift for that range. But anyone else that jumps out to you?
Anybody else that jumps out? Grant Fontenot from LSU, senior sign, big-time stuff, relief pitcher all the way. Basically, if you can get him even close to the zone, that's kind of in that – it's not the same, but it's in that Cal Randall category where it's like this stuff is just so massive that you could see him moving quickly. There is work to do with Fontenot a little bit more even than Cal Randall, but I like that pick. And so I think that there were a number of sneaky guys in that draft.
Thoughts on Angels draft. So I'm going to say there's some guys here who, like – I would say, like, again, we talked a little bit about they took a high school guy at the top, and then they went back to their college boat after that. We talked about Grohovac and Lujo and how we liked them yesterday. Jackson Willis in the fifth, we talked a little bit about earlier.
Great value.
Great value there. I would actually say, like, Jackson Willits in the fifth, Garrett Wright in the eighth is an athletic catcher who can play center field.
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of like, I'm stunned that he was still on the board at pick 229. Yeah. I don't know what I'm missing because...
Listen, I actually think that there's a chance, and I don't know this, so this is just me talking out of, you know, pure opinion, but I think that there's a chance that the Angels did some work there, that they were able to float a guy down like Garrett Wright and get some players ahead of him. Like, if you look at their draft, Justin Bird and Ryan Hetzler, who they took in the sixth and seventh rounds respectively, those are not just relievers from a projection standpoint. They're relievers... right now. They were college relievers heading into the draft. So it's pretty clear what that demographic tends to do from a signing standpoint. And then when you get Garrett Wright into the fold, because I would imagine you saved some money on guys like Justin Bird and Ryan Hetzler, it's a great pick. I kind of said it under my breath there, but I think that's one of the picks of the day to get somebody who is catcher capable, center field capable, at least average, if not plus run. He's a good hitter. I think he performed generally very well after coming back from a broken hamate bone. That's an outstanding pick. Trevor Hanson, they drafted in the ninth round. Nothing really plus there. Like, I don't know that there's anything in his repertoire that is a true standout offering, but everything is very solid. There's nothing that is bad in Trevor Hanson's repertoire. The control is also solid. And then later on, I will highlight one of their last picks, and that is 17th rounder TJ Grimes, who they took as a second baseman out of UT Martin. He is a 5'10" second baseman. He's played some outfield, but he is one of, if not the best runners in this entire class. He broke the OVC, the Ohio Valley Conference stolen base single season record. I believe it was 55 steals over the course of the season, or 66 steals, something absurd this year. He is also a good hitter. So that's a senior sign. Another one of those guys that, you know, it doesn't necessarily cost you too much, but the upside there is really interesting.
Okay. Cardinals. I think we did
Cardinals.
Yeah, we did Cardinals earlier. So
just the quick synopsis there without going through all the players. It's a really good draft. They got a number of guys who we've been high on at Baseball America. Cal Randall, Caden Ferraro, Trevor Condon. That is one of the strongest drafts this year, in my opinion.
Okay, Padres draft. So you know what the Padres, you're going to get some upside. We saw that yesterday. Coleman Borthwick, Elliot Lachelles, who I think we were big fans, kind of a riser Canadian shortstop. And then I would say that with that, though, also you expect with the Padres draft that there are going to be some senior signs and all that.
We got them.
We got them this year.
Yeah. We got them today. We did. Sean Fitzpatrick in the eighth round, a lefty reliever out of Arizona State, big time spin, low slot guy, good extension for low slot. But again, that is a senior sign. Robert Evans is a senior sign.
Augie Lopez.
Yeah.
He's a dark field sophomore. Sorry. Yeah. Augie Lopez is not. Augie Lopez is a... intriguing, but we're going to have to work a catcher. But if I'm right, Chris McHugh also he's not a draft. He's not a senior. No. He's a guy who was really good last year, struggled to match that this year.
Yeah, but I also would say that with the Padres draft, in addition to some of the things that they just do and you can expect from them, Albert Robles is another one of the senior signs that they had late in the draft. But one of the things that they do well this year, in my opinion, is they got some quality bat options. New Contratus from Arizona State, to me, is probably my favorite pick that they made today. I just think that Contratus is somewhat overlooked because of his injury history, but that's somebody who has a long-standing track record of hitting at a high major level. The power is above average. This year, it actually looked plus. He had 21 home runs after hitting six a year earlier. There was I believe it was a back injury in 2024 that held him out for the entirety of the season. Obviously, that's cleared up now, and we kind of saw the results of that. So the thing my brain does is wonder, does a guy like that just need health to be what he is now? Like, did we see the real new Contratus? I think that was a big win for them.
I'm sorry, I had one there I wanted to go, Chris, which is, who are the best injured players who are drafted? Very quick answer on that, which is I would say that Brody Bumilla and Sean Duncan, the left-hander,
and Isaac,
the pair of, those were all guys who really kind of stood out. That
I'll give you one more actually before we move on from that, and I will scroll up here and find the comment because somebody nailed this about 2 seconds into our show, and we have to give them their flowers.
That's why I'm going
to
go all the way up there because it's like
all the way up. We got hundreds of comments. Thank you everybody for joining us and dropping your comments. But Cody New, and maybe Chris, you can help me out here. Somebody commented on Cody New and the Dodgers. That is, in my opinion, one of the best picks of the day. There you go. Just letting you all know, Cody New will be the guy the Dodgers make into a good arm. Mr. 91, Jay May, agree. He is definitely talented. He was at Cal Baptist this year. I was looking forward very much coming into the season to seeing him in person. I thought that he had top five rounds upside, just a lefty with good stuff. He blew out, and I think he threw like 3 1/3 innings this year before that happened. So I love that pick as well.
See a couple Mets, if you want to serve that up here, Chris, at the bottom here. Mets. The Mets went college pitcher heavy. It's not, when you say financial constraints, guys, one thing to understand about all this, no one's trying to be cheap here. You have the limit. I apologize. It may be that you're saying this, which is right. They don't have as many picks at the top as some, so they're not going to be able to, sign three big bonus high school guys like say the White Sox can. So if that's what you're saying, but you know, but yes, they're signing, they're going to do their full pool. We know that, like that's, but they took, Carson Wiggins, Aiden Robbins, Shane Sadow yesterday. Today, there was a lot of pitchers in this, but who really jumped out to you?
There were a lot of pitchers, and there were a lot of guys who I actually think are very quality pitchers. Luke McNeely, their first pick of day two in the fifth round, he is super interesting. I think that that is somebody who has the chance to make a major step now that he's in pro ball because there are spin traits there. Fastball quality, he's a great mover. He's also very projectable body-wise, and that seems like somebody who could take a big step. Nate Eisler, who they took in the 10th round out of the Ivy League, out of Dartmouth. Interesting traits. You actually wrote him up after the draft was over, so you can talk about it if you want.
So, I mean, there's a fastball that it – there are moments that you see what you want to see.
Yeah.
And you don't see it enough.
That's a perfect
is way. What I would say it. Yeah. Is that so you've got the body there. You've got a fastball that at its best is 96, 97. It's got life at the top of the zone. Other times it's 92, 93, and it's a little
even middle 90,
you know. And so you got it's like, okay, if we could now take the best of him and turn that into something, you've really got something. But if you don't, you could have nothing. So, I mean, again, he's an interesting developmental.
The breaking balls are good too, though, there.
Yeah. I mean, again, at their best. But Zach Crotchfell is a
name, I like that one too.
You know, that was his 14th rounder is
definitely
a name to watch, I would say.
Number 9 senior sign for us. He had a really great postseason, great year overall. He kind of was the fireman go-to guy for Troy in their run to the College World Series, so I thought that was a good pick. And then there was one more for the Mets that I wanted to talk about.
I'll scroll back down.
Scroll down for me there. AJ Crowdell, who they drafted in the 12th round. Out of UC Santa Barbara, I have been on the AJ Crowdell train for a while now. One of the more fun developmental picks in this year's draft, the velocity there is light. That is the big knock. It is 90 to 91 up to about 4 or 5, but the extension, which is a big deal now, is outstanding. It is up to 7'2" of extension, which is like, I mean, you contextualize that forever. That is like unbelievably.
Well, and again, especially the thing with extension you want to watch for, though, is if a 7 foot guy has 7'2", you're like, okay, what you're talking about is that the hitter in their mind perceives expected extension in some ways, right? So if a guy's 6'5" and he's 7'2", then it's going to feel different than if you're releasing it at 6'5", basically.
Right.
You expect the extension and their height to be somewhat similar.
So this is somebody who has elite extension by all measures, and then the shapes are really good too. So like the fastball, for even the fact that it's light, it does have really good shape to it, and then he can really spin the baseball. So if the Mets can kind of tap into the things that allow people to control the baseball a little bit better, to repeat the delivery a little bit more, those are the things that I think could allow him to take off.
Okay, I wanted to get this one up there. It was explained to me about the selecting Becker over Strohsteiner. Not anti-Becker, he's a fine addition, but they need outfielders and power. I will tell you right now, Carlos Collazo agrees with you. Carlos, you know, believe from the standpoint of really believing in Sawyer Strohsteiner. The simple answer I would say, though, is now, again, this is an organization that took LeBron in the first.
Yes.
Becker is kind of like, okay, so you really kind of shoved all your chips in the first round on a guy who could hit a home run there, or you could absolutely strike out.
And then, be safe.
And now they came back with a guy who I would say is not as physical, is not as interesting, is not as high ceiling, but has a very high likelihood of putting bat on ball, being a solid defender, being up the middle guy, like Matt McClain light.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that with Becker, to JJ's point, you are kind of playing the safety game a little bit after drafting Justin LeBron. And I think that one of the things that emerged later in this draft cycle that became important for Sawyer Strohsnyder is that he's not a safe pick. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that we entered the year feeling like maybe he had a chance to be that, but there were, and you can go over to Baseball America and you can find whether it's from Carlos, from Peter Flaherty, who's now a scout with the Nationals, who had a great couple days here, from myself. There were hit tool questions mm-hmm. about Sawyer Strohsnyder. And I think as the year went on, a lot of those hit tool questions that entered the year felt a little bit more unresolved than teams would have liked. And if you're in the Reds' shoes and you just drafted Justin LeBron, who has the ultimate hit tool question of all the hit tool questions in that range, you can't take Sawyer Strohsnyder as well, because you're leaving yourself in a position where your first two picks are extremely hit-risk guys.
Thoughts on the Braves draft, especially with the amount of preps they selected? We did talk about Gracia and Beck at the top, but obviously even yesterday, we got through Dennis. It was the prep guys yesterday, I would say more so, although they did add Jack Brenner in the seventh round today. But it's really the prep guys that they took yesterday. We did talk about on the show yesterday that this is why you take Gracia and Beck at the top. This is, I would say, very much you're looking at the top five players as a portfolio here where, I'll put it this way. Beck went 26. If you told me that Beck ended up, again, we don't know any bonus information yet, but I'm just theorizing. But if you told me that he ended up being third, fourth highest bonus in their class, I wouldn't be shocked. You know, the high school guys are, generally the ones who really get paid. They figured out ways to really make multiple. The thing that I do like about that is we've seen the Braves have had a lot of success with developing pitching in many years, let's just say that. Not even just recent years, but many years. But on top of that, three quality guys, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. Like, okay, I feel pretty comfortable saying not all three of those guys are going to work out. But probably one, high school maybe
pitching.
Two.
Yeah, it's high school pitching. It's a risky demographic. Those guys, you are buying a risk, and it's a known thing in the industry. But I also think that they surrounded those players early, the high school pitching, with a number of really quality players, and like especially early on with the bats. Braves did a good job.
I was going to say, we saw that one for a second. The Rangers didn't get Taylor Rabe, so that's where I was a little confused on that one. So, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. That's what we're looking for. I was like, okay. Okay.
Yes. The Rangers did get Hudson Calhoun. The Royals did get Taylor Rabe. I'll start with Taylor Rabe because he went earlier. Mm-hmm. I love Taylor Rabe. If you're a listener to BA college content or draft content, you've heard me say this before. I think it's a premium fastball package. I do absolutely share the concerns that people have brought up at Baseball America, a lot of my colleagues, with his lack of feel for spin. That matters a ton. But as we talked about earlier in the show, that is an area where teams are pretty confident they can help you out and install, whether it's a gyro slider, a new changeup look. Like there are avenues to helping guys who are not spin efficient be a little bit better in the off-speed department. And I think that Taylor Rabe is a candidate to get there just because the release traits are so good and the fastball is so good. And okay.
I want to ask you on Hudson Calhoun.
Yeah, please.
What do you think chances are he goes out as a starter? Even though he's been a reliever, like if you don't, He gets talked about a lot. This guy is a reliever, but he's got starter traits. We're going to make him a starter in pro ball. I will say most of the time, not always, but much of the time, relievers are relievers for a reason.
Yes.
And college coaches aren't generally, I know that Ole Miss had a loaded rotation. We talked about Taylor Rabe. We talked about Cade Townsend, first round picks, and then Hunter Elliott, senior, a veteran who they lefty who they really depend on and rely on. But that said, usually starters stay starters and relievers end up relieving. And they don't often jump back to that. But do you think there's a chance, or do you think he's more reliever?
No, I do think there's a chance. And it's the perfect guy to ask about, because I think that some of the traits that he has, whether it's the fastball, the ability to spin it, like those are things that I think will allow him in particular, because they're so good, to give starting a shot. I also think that a team like the Rangers is going to be inclined to be a little bit more liberal when it comes to allowing guys to have starting opportunities if they didn't get them in college. Just because there's a confidence in that organization that they're going to be able to, bring new things out of guys based on the fact that, like I said, that they can spin a baseball a certain way because of how their fastball looks and comes out of their hand. That's just a very deeply analytical team. And so it wouldn't surprise me. Now, at the same time, Would it surprise me to see him very quickly move back into a relief role? No, not at all. But I do think they'll give the experiment a shot.
Okay, Nationals day two. Daniel Cuvée, fifth round pick, is, I think, again.
Yeah, in context.
At pick 38, I would have hated that pick. At pick 138, I'm like, thumbs up.
Yeah. No, I think that the Nationals had a really good day today. And I think that Daniel Cuvée is kind of the perfect vessel to talk about this. But the MLB draft is dependent, at least in part, on taking guys in the appropriate range. Like, you change somebody's outlook when you take them, like JJ said, at 138 versus 38. And I think that in this case, with the Nationals, there was a lot of really, like, I'll call it appropriate value selecting. In the case of Cashel Duggar, and you'll like this one, but Cashel Duggar for UCLA, the everyday starting catcher, a sure-handed, solid receiving, solid throwing, like solid arm, not necessarily time-wise, but solid arm catcher, who I think has the ingredients to take a huge step forward defensively. If the Nationals view him as a defensive ace behind the plate, the ninth round at 256th overall, that's a great pick if you're going to be able to get him to realize some of that potential. Matthew Dallas out of Wake Forest in the 12th round, 346th overall. I'm blind. I can't see that far away.
346, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's an outstanding pick. I mean, I know of a number of people who were very excited about Matthew Dallas this year, just off of the raw stuff alone, and there's been an injury history there that's a little bit alarming. But in that range, you're not really getting hurt. It's like a risk-free waiver. So I am pretty cautiously optimistic about the Nationals draft. I think they did a really good job.
Really good. Okay. What are a couple of players that slid the most in the draft in your opinion? I think we talked about a couple of them already, but I'm going to call up our master plan real quick so I can stare at the rankings while we're doing this.
I'll open it up with somebody that we talked about, and that's Garrett Wright, who was selected by the Angels in the eighth round.
That's
Garrett Wright, to me, was a top 100 prospect, and he was picked in the eighth round. That is a steal. I think it was one of the steals of the day. Slide is a tougher term because I think in baseball—
You have to wait to see the bonuses.
That's it. Like, we don't know yet who slid. We know who went in a range that didn't agree with our rankings, which matter. And, look, the way that the baseball— one of the reasons I love the Baseball America rankings, obviously, bias aside, but one of the reasons I love the Baseball America rankings is that we do put them together based on scout feedback. We are polling the industry effectively to come up with a top 500 list. And so, to some degree, when guys go way out of range relative to where we had them ranked, it is in some cases a reflection of a departure from industry consensus. And so, in that sense, there were a lot of guys who slid. In the sense of the actual structure of the baseball draft, like JJ just said, we don't yet know who slid a bunch until we see what they get paid. Because if you're Garrett Wright and you would get second round money, you did not slide. You were just picked in the eighth round and you picked the team that you went to and you agreed to a deal and you slid that far. So the answer is kind of, unfortunately, we got to wait and see.
And again, also with that, like, we could also say with other guys, like we talked about, like Gavin Gallagher slid out of the draft. But again, it's not like, I don't think that was something where every team collectively decided, no, he's not draftable. It was something that we don't know the full picture of yet as far as signability and all that.
And I just think that, like, that's a good question. We'll basically, we need to do another podcast in a couple of weeks and we'll circle back to that question.
Okay. This is a good one. And this one tees you up again. But Dodgers got Gavin Van Kempen. Is that a steal in the 12th round? He was really good at ECU before going down.
Yeah, he was very good for ECU before going down. I actually think that the Dodgers had one of the better second halves of the draft. I think that their 11th through 20th
Shocker.
Rounds. Yeah. The 11th through 20th, I say that and I'm like ducking because I know that there are people who are rolling their eyes right now. But the reality is they took a number of guys who I thought were really good. Gavin Van Kempen, Tommy John guy. I think if he's fully healthy, we're talking about somebody that goes in the top six rounds, to be a little bit broader with it, just because he did have Tommy John surgery at the end of the year. That's a limiting factor. He also could go back to school. He was granted a waiver, I was told, the day before the draft. So that makes it a little bit more interesting and could contribute to why he was a post-10 guy. We talked about Cody New earlier. That's another one of those like Tommy John sneakier picks. Ethan Sutton, who I mentioned earlier in the show when I was talking about NIL and its influence. That's a guy in the 16th round where it's like, if you're going to get him to sign and you're going to get him into your organization, that's going to look pretty crazy. And then I will shout out the Cape Cod League sleepers list, a five-person list Camden Wimbish, who we saw a couple days ago for the Brewster Whitecaps, was their 17th round selection. I also like that pick too.
We're going to have to wrap up. I know we've already hit an hour, but hold on. Put that back on the one that was left there. So you got, wanted to get to this real quick. Do pour out loads factor in the level of instruction that college players get? Like the difference between a pitcher at Wake Forest versus a smaller D1? I can kind of think I can answer this, which is, I would say to an extent, but it's not about as much the level of instruction. It's about pro teams, scouts, analysts, front offices love to identify what I would describe as untapped potential, right? So if you see a pitcher, and this is examples that I'm using real life, even, I don't even think I can remember some of the names, but like talking to scouts, talking to people over past years, it's like there was a pitcher who had great four-seam fastball characteristics. It had velocity, it had a low VAA, flat, you know, and then also had life top of zone, good swings and misses. Working at a school that was a sinker slider school, and the coach just always called sinkers, right? That was exactly opposite of what that pitcher needed to pitch. His numbers were terrible. But teams saw that and said, oh, this is a something that we don't even have to fix. This is just literally, we're going to start using him in a proper way. But to go beyond that, okay, if you see a pitcher, teams are very much looking. They're watching a lot of lower halves, right? They're looking, are you getting into your league leg block where you are generating the velocity that your body has kind of stored in it? If you're not, and that's, you can say that's the level of instruction, but if you're not, that's something that they often think, okay, we can do that. We can help that. In some cases, teams will look at a guy, he's a real short strider. We think we can lengthen out his stride, and maybe that's going to fix problems he has. Maybe you see a guy who is throwing a curveball and you think he should be a slider guy. Maybe he's throwing a four seamer, think he's just a sinker guy. Like they're, I would say that more than they're looking at and saying, oh, this guy has an instruction, this guy has, they're looking at it as, is this pitcher optimized, getting everything out of what that pitcher is, how they move, they're a pronator or a supinator, all those factors, you know, like, are they getting the most out of them? And if not, they kind of like that because they maybe will get that player a little bit later in the draft, but then help them kind of find another gear.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's do like three more and then we're going to have to wrap this up because we've already hit an hour. Okay, grades overall month. We don't do grades. I'll tell you right now,
yeah,
anyone who's doing grades right now is lying to you because
we don't know who signed even yet.
We don't even know who signed. Okay, so I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be on a rant here, but we don't know who signed. But also on that, this is a 20-round draft. If you want to say, here are players, we try to identify this. Here are players that went earlier than we thought, later than we thought. Here's what we thought about this draft and all that. But I don't have the arrogance to say that, hey, myself or even the staff of BA, our collective wisdom, knows so much more than the 30 teams that we're going to say literally on a draft that ended hours ago. Now, if you want to say in a year from now, that looks like a bad draft, that looks like a good draft, you're starting to get some indications, even in, I would say by mid next year. Yeah. But if you said, oh, this team doesn't know what they're doing, again, the example I use is that, look, when Evan Carter was taken by the Rangers in 2020, you could look at it a couple of ways. The dumb way to look at it would be, oh, they're idiots. The smart way to look at it would be, do they know something I don't know? And in that case, they did. And again, these are teams that are spending literally thousands and thousands of hours to put together these drafts. And so we will give our thoughts and we'll share where we think a team's going against consensus or not. We're not trying to be homers when we do that. We're not trying to, you know, shy away from being, you know, critical about things. But at the same time, we're just not, I don't think it's possible at this point to say, oh, this grade's an F, this grade's an A. And again, I, as someone who's an NFL draft fan and tracks these things and that, basically they're fun for fans, but they're also just completely and utterly meaningless. So sorry, we're not going to give you grades. Apologize on that.
But let's
yeah. Look so the Marlins draft. We can talk about the Marlins draft.
No grade, but let's look at the draft because I actually like their group. I think that this was one of the best examples of finding college talent throughout the country and at different levels. You start the draft Jacob Lombard, I think, was a great pick just because when you have the opportunity to draft a guy who I think was really widely viewed as a top 8-ish pick for some time, and he gets down to 14, when you have that kind of hometown kid, when you have that opportunity, it's great. They did it. Made a lot of sense. Ethan Kleinschmidt, Ryan Peterson, Camden Kojal. I'm literally just going down the list. Wesley Roberson, Trey Beard. Those were all, that's their first five rounds worth of picks, six total selections. It was a really good job. I mean, you could go and nitpick some of those guys like Trey Beard. Do I love Trey Beard? No. I mean, Trey Beard, I think, has a lot of work to do in the velocity department to be more than an org guy at this point. Like, it's a really good changeup. It's unique release traits, but it's just light velocity. And we're in an era now where that's just like JJ's written about this. It doesn't play to not have velocity, at least at a certain level. And he really doesn't. But again, like in the fifth round at 147th overall, you see if you can do it. That's exactly right. Like I think that this was a great example of just getting guys in the right spot. Eric Guevara, seventh round pick, thunderous velocities, exit velocities. He's able to go and play third base at a pretty decent level. They drafted him as a shortstop. I don't see why you don't do that. You go and give it a shot to make the maximum defensive value. But at the end of the day, probably a third baseman. Let's talk about the pick. Rintaro Sasaki in the eighth round. If I'm going to nitpick one thing, did not love that. I don't think he was a draftable player personally. And respectfully, this is our job, though. We analyze these players. Rintaro Sasaki was a little bit of a surprise to me. He brings no defensive value outside of first base. This is a poor athlete, poor runner. There's poor field to hit game-wise. It was better this year. I think that he took a big step forward. The power is massive. Whether or not he's going to be able to get to that as a pro remains to be seen. Did he need to go in the eighth round? Was that really like where the pressure was to get him off the board? I struggled to see it, but I don't know. I don't know. So that's the only one, though. Like, if I'm going to nitpick one thing, it's that. But you can go then to like the 10th round and talk about Zachary Peters out of VCU. That's a high octane reliever with a number of really good pitches. Let's go back to a conversation we had a couple minutes ago. Guys who are relievers in college that have a chance to maybe reverse course and try starting, that's one for sure. Zachary Peters, big fastball, field of spin. There's a decent curveball in there. He's a great mover. That's interesting. Fabio Bundy, who they took in the 11th round, is a JUCO commit to UCLA from Southern California. He is originally from Switzerland, so you can imagine just kind of the rawness that comes with a pitcher like that. I think that that's a really intriguing play. He can really spin the baseball. It's 3,000 plus RPMs on a number of different breaking ball shapes. That's super intriguing. Colin Linder, who they got in the 15th round, way later than I thought that he would go. Big cut ride fastball shape on a probable reliever. I would imagine, just because he did it in college, that there will be some starting opportunities at the front of his pro career. But fastballs like his and the ability to spin it like he can, those are the guys that can move pretty quickly as a reliever. And this is an organization that's not necessarily afraid to do that at that position specifically. Maybe a little bit more cautious elsewhere, but relievers in that organization do tend to move pretty well.
Okay, so I wanted to kind of try to answer this one. I love these process questions because I think there's a lot of fans who understandably don't fully understand this.
Yeah.
Can you explain the insurance picks? How do teams draft projected top 100 players in the 18th round and not try to sign them? Okay, let me try to explain this. So the draft in Major League Baseball, you have the bonus pool system, right? So your top 10 round picks, you have a certain amount of money that you are allotted for each of those picks. That does not mean that you sign them for exactly that amount of money, but your totality of your top 10 round picks is how much money you have to spend. On top of that, though, if you don't sign a player in the top 10 rounds, that player's bonus pool is deducted. So if you have a $4 million slot and you don't sign your first round pick, if you had $10 million in pool before, now you have six, right? Okay. So the reason you don't take a guy who you don't think you're going to sign in the top 10 rounds is because if you do, there's a penalty to it,
right,
as far as your bonus pool. 11th round on, that penalty goes away. If you don't sign an 18th rounder, nothing happens. So if you think that there's a 5% shot that you're going to be able to sign a guy and you take him in the top 10 rounds, that's stupid because you're just throwing away bonus pool. But if you take him in the 18th round and you don't sign him, no big deal.
Yep.
But on top of that, when you say the insurance part of it is, and I would say that the insurance is the second tier. It's not the guy who's going to get first round money, right? If you can't find a way where your second round pick fails to sign and you have $3 million squirreled away. But you can have a scenario where you all, the senior signs and all, And so your senior second round pick or your third round pick was going to get a mil and a half over slot. That player doesn't sign, but you still have a mil and a half or a million or 750,000 still available to spend. Well, then you want to make sure that you have a player later on who you can sign for that much larger bonus than normal for a day late day two pick. That's why you would take a guy like that.
Exactly. And I'll just say, to this point, he'll go to the MVP. I think this is referring to Rintaro Sasaki, to what you just said. That's actually a great example. I'm glad you said that. No, he won't.
That's why
they took him in the eighth round, because they know that he will sign with them and he will give American baseball a shot. Yeah.
Okay, one more question. We're going to wrap it up. And then I think this is another process one. So this will be our last one, which is it possible that Jacob Lombard is going to take a hometown discount? No. Okay, and this was, I saw another question about this, I think, by the same person before. I want to explain this. So when you say, how does a guy float down in the draft, right? Well, there's a simple way for that too, which is if you have a number, right? And if you want to, if you have a number, and again, I'm using not Lombard in particular, but how this works. I want 5 million, or I want 4 million, I want 7 million, whatever it is, right? And you have a team that is willing to do this, right? That's willing to pay that. And you know that. You already know because teams talk to players before the draft. You still have to get picked by them, but you talk to them before the draft. Well, you put out a number and other teams are like, nope, not going to pay that. Nope, we're not going to pay that. And by the way, sometimes that number is a higher number than you actually are going to sign for, but to further scare them away. And then you float down to the team that you already basically have kind of said, okay, this will work for us. But there are also examples of that. I think a very famous one was Jay Groom had a number. And he was floating down. He's going to get to the Padres. And then the Red Sox basically said, nope, we're drafting you. And they did. And so at that point, then you have to then say, okay, you have this number. We're not going to pay you that number, but are you going to go to school? And then sometimes players do, sometimes they don't. But that's something where when you say float, there's always the chance. We talked about this year with Rock Chulaski. Oh, does he want to go to the Giants at 4? You have to have three teams above him all say, nope, we're not going to take you. And nope, we're not going to think that we're going to be able to sign you, even if your numbers are up. So hopefully that explains that a little bit. And I see Mitchell Hopkins. That makes sense. Thank you. Again, I love talking about this kind of stuff. It is arcane. It is complex. I understand completely how this is hard to understand in a lot of ways. But we hope you enjoyed this live. We've tried to go to 45 minutes and we went 30 minutes past that because we love talking about this stuff. Jacob, obviously, we got to get some, I think our first real meal of the day at some point, and it's been a crazy day. And we have more reports to write, because by tomorrow, our plan is that you will have reports. I think we have 37 reports left to do to have reports on every one of the top 10 rounds. We have a lot of reports on players after that as well. And to be honest, I'm probably going to be stupid at some point and kind of fill in a few more of those, the low-hanging fruit, because there are a lot of guys that we don't have reports on in that 12th, 15th, 18th round, but are interesting guys who's like, okay, might write a short, quickie report on them, some of them as well, because we just know, you know, we love doing this. We've done a lot of work on this. We want to share that work with you guys in a lot of ways. But obviously, check baseballamerica.com out. We have futures game coverage too. You know, it's like we did a lot today. But the other thing I'll say with that is we will continue to cover this draft, but we also turn the page. We will check out. Do make sure you also check out at baseballamerica.com. We will have updated 27 lists coming out this week with reports, because we juggle. We do the 26th draft and the 27th and the 28th. We also have recruiting rankings. We'll do an analysis that Ben Battler and Jacob will be doing about the classes for now that we know. We don't know who signed yet, but we do know who got drafted, and we do know who got drafted in the top 10 rounds. There are classes that's really significant for. In a good way, I think Vanderbilt would be one of those.
Yep.
And then there are classes for whom that would be significant in a bad way as well. So we have a lot more coming at baseballamerica.com this week, and we will keep you all as up to date on everything we can with the draft, with the futures game, with the All-Star game, with everything going on at baseballamerica.com. For Jacob, I'm JJ. Thank you all for coming out. So many people joining us tonight. Thank you. We really do appreciate it. Thank you especially to Baseball America subscribers. That's why we get to be here, do what we do. That's why we get to work on the draft 365 days a year, because you all support us. If you haven't done it, please join us. And also, like to remind you, please do subscribe to the BA YouTube feed if you're watching this on YouTube, because that does help not just you get to see it, but it also helps other people get to see it as well. Again, for Jacob, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.